listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you for joining me today on the Daily Gold Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with returning guest, Gwen Preston. She is the editor of the Resource Maven newsletter. You can find her at resourcemaven.ca. Gwen, I know you're a little tight on time today, so I'll get right to the first question. And let's start off and you just give us your general view of the resource and gold market here and now and where you see things going as spring ends and we get into the early summer.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jordan. I think you and I are reasonably aligned in the way that we see gold going forward, which I always like, by the way, because you look at things from a technical perspective and I look at things on a more fundamental, from a more fundamental angle. So I like when those align. It adds confidence. But I was certainly in the, for recent months, I've been concentrating on, I've been talking a lot about how gold often goes through a fairly strong period in the spring. I've been calling it the spring run. Didn't know how long it was going to be. It got its extra boost of fuel, of course, when all of the geopolitical tensions ramped up and gold jumped up through its 200-day moving average, and that certainly extended the run there. But now it looks like that run for the spring is probably over. The technical charts aren't looking as good. We're just sort of sitting right on that 200-day moving average. And just in terms of patterns, gold usually turns down after that spring run because of the unavoidable summer doldrums. So we're probably looking out to that right now. Where's the next bottom? It could be the next Fed rate hike, which is in June. It could be more generally in that time frame because gold will bottom in June. It always does. I'm hopeful and fairly confident that that bottom will maintain the pattern of higher highs and higher lows that will keep us in a bull market. But you know, I think we're looking at a bit of a slide going forward from here. And then I'm optimistic about the fall because the fundamentals for the gold market remain very strong. Real rates are considerably negative right now, not just in America but around the world. We could talk for a long time about that, but the fundamentals for gold make a lot of sense. So I'm optimistic that the fall is going to be a strong period. When a new market gets going, it takes time, right? It doesn't go straight up, and that's the process we're going through right now. It's just a stepwise progress. Other metals, also interesting. I mean, zinc had such a hot year last year. It has stepped back so far to start this year. To me, that makes good sense. There has been some supply response from major mines, so some of the pressures have come off. That said, I think as long as the zinc price stays at or above a dollar per pound, that sustains a dynamic zinc equity market that's got lots of opportunities. So from my position, I'm happy with zinc above a dollar. Then I think there's lots of interesting opportunities to make money on zinc stocks. And that situation, I think, will persist for a few years because the zinc supply-demand story is going to take a while to resolve. So all told, you know, I think the market, I'm happy with where the market is. I think we've got the next little bit, next few weeks, months of more positioning opportunity and paying attention to what's going on. And then I think things are going to take off again in the fall.
Yeah, let's turn to the companies. And you mentioned something before we started recording, which I've been noticing and a few other people have mentioned to me. And there's a lot of juniors that just seem to be, or in recent months, that have performed well outside of just the sector itself. I mean, the whole GDXJ thing, I mean, that's another animal.
yeah.
But you're talking about some certain districts where a lot of money is going into those districts. And I'm just speaking personally, in the last couple of days, we've seen huge declines in the market. And I mean, my stocks, not to say I'm the greatest stock picker, but I'm just surprised that when I'm looking at my accounts, they're holding up very well considering the losses in GDX and GDXJ. I mean, is that something you're seeing? I mean, how do you explain? It just seems like the junior exploration sector itself, these smaller companies. I mean, the juniors that I see people in Canadians, they refer to juniors as these smaller companies. when you get into the U.S., I mean, they're talking about juniors, and these companies have like 500 million market caps. So it doesn't really make sense to me. I'm sorry, I'm drowning on and on here. But is this something that you're seeing? I mean, how do you explain all this?
It's a really interesting question. So I think there's a couple different parts to it. When you're talking about Canadian juniors, the market, the bull market that we're in, if that's what we want to call it, is still young. And that means, to me, there's a lot of sort of just under the surface moving parts that you have to pay attention to. For example, some small juniors that are performing really well that may have to do with a promotion move or something to do with a financing and or warrants coming out. When you're early in a market and there's still a lot of dynamic movement in those parts, so it's not everybody's going up, but those individual stock efforts are sort of more obvious, that plays a role. So I think that's part of it. But what we were talking about before we started recording that I think is more interesting and more exciting is that there have been some stocks that are just doing really well, despite it all. Some of it's sort of regional plays. I wrote an article just last week about a part of Quebec called the Urban Berry Camp, where, sure, Osisko Mining is delineating the Windfall project there. It's a high-grade gold deposit that Osisko clearly sees a lot of upside to because they're drilling, if you can believe it, 400,000 meters there this year, which is an insane number. But there's an area play developing there, and stock prices for companies in that area have doubled or tripled in the last few months. And then there's the Mariana takeout that just happened this morning. So that happened at sort of an 85% premium. And there's other things like the Camino Minerals discovery down in Peru. That's a single drill hole that returned, 1.3% copper over 100 meters or so. Saw that share price almost quadruple in a few days. What I love about this stuff is it says that the market is healthy. There's a lot of interest there, both from the majors or mid-tiers wanting to do deals, to scoop up good companies and good assets and do deals, and just from the retail, from the market, getting involved and seeing opportunity and taking advantage of it. So that to me says that despite the sideways nature that we sort of are sitting in right now for gold, and you can analyze it endlessly, as you and I do, and you can convince yourself quite easily, that there's reason for concern. Despite all of that, there's still this huge amount of interest in really good companies and good projects. And that, like I say, just says to me that the market's healthy and that, summer doldrums aside, there's a lot of good opportunity going forward. So that encourages me to continue positioning in what I think are the best opportunities out there.
Right, and not to ask you to give away all your secrets, but I mean, are there? I mean, just you know, I don't want you to give out direct company names, but I mean, are there general opportunities that you see out there? I mean, I guess one question I would have is this Urban Berry District. I mean, one question I'm sure listeners would like to know. I mean, I know it's tough when for people who are not experts, but how can they figure out when these moves in some of these stocks have gone too far versus when there's actually a genuine opportunity? So, Len, but before I drown on and ask another three questions, I'll just stop there and let you answer that one first.
Right. I mean, really good question. So there's a little bit two parts. Just in the Urban Berry Camp, there's a bunch of companies operating. The one that I particularly like is Bonterra, which is BTO on the venture. I do think that there's still a lot of a good upside there because they just got raised a whole bunch of money, including $5 million from Kinross, and that money is going into the ground now, but results have not started coming out yet. So I think we're in the calm before what could be a pretty good storm. That was not the right analogy. But anyways, for Bonterra. So I like that story. I think there's good opportunity there. They're just south of that Windfall project of Osisko's. More generally, when it comes to big share price moves, there's a couple factors for sure. I would say pay attention to volumes. You want to see how much of the share count has already moved and whether that's a sustainable volume to maintain. I think you also really need to pay attention to whether there was a financing anytime recently, because if there is, If there was, and there's a free trade date coming, that usually portends downside for the share price, at least to the price of the financing, as people sell their shares just to play the free ride on the warrant. Also for price moves, you want to make sure that it was 100% based on actual news and not on a promotion effort. I mean, promotion efforts, I don't think promotion is a bad word. Promotion is part of how you get the story out, and nobody's going to buy a stock if they've never heard of it. But there's different degrees to which companies pursue promotion, and some of those avenues for promotion can create immense price moves, but they're often not that sustainable. So you want to just be careful. Even if you hear about a stock because you're on a mailing list for something, if you hear about it, you like the story, you go and check it, and all of a sudden that day it's up 40%, well, that may not hold because that's a promotion move. So there's a lot of factors at play. Another one I would say is when a price moves because a major has invested in a company, that I would generally describe as a more sustainable price move, because usually the price has moved up to the point at which the major invested. And, you know, when Kinross moves in or Newmont moves in, they're there for the long haul. At least there's going to be a good slew of news that comes out. Whether the news is good or bad depends on the story, but at least there's going to be a bunch of news coming out because of the investment. So huge number of factors to play. At the end of the day, it comes down to management. If you don't know who they are, you know, call them, have a conversation with them, get a sense of how you feel about them as people. Sounds like I'm talking touchy-feely here, but at the end of the day, they're managing the money that you're putting in. They're managing your dollars. So you have to not just feel that they're good at it, but feel that they're a team. You know, one of my fails when it comes to investing in the portfolio last year was when I invested in a company that promised to do X, Y, and Z in a particular time frame, and I sort of took them at their word. But the only way to accomplish that time frame was for it to have been an A team, right? For it to have been, you know, a really solid management team, and it turned out it was sort of a C team, and they missed the timelines, and that meant that they missed the market, and it just didn't work. So at the end of the day, it comes back to management, but there's all these other factors with promotion and warrants and news flow and trading volumes that you also have to incorporate.
Yeah, and along those lines, as far as majors investing, let's talk about another area, and that's the Yukon. I mean, I remember I wasn't really involved in investing there in the 2008 to 2011 cycle, but it just, after that, it seemed like it was a flash in the pan, and now we have all these major companies making investments. And I mean, even Barrick, who in recent years, I mean, they've been running themselves, you know, very conservatively, more like a real company than an actual mining company. And so, I mean, I feel like when they actually made an investment in there recently, that for me really moved the needle, even though, I mean, Goldcorp's in there,
Agnico's in there, Newmont's in there, almost everybody's in there.
Talk about the significance of that, because like I said, it seemed like people were saying the Yukon was a flash in the pan, but now everybody's going in there. What do you see from that?
The Yukon is such an interesting jurisdiction right now. I've had a bunch of meetings in the last 2 weeks about assets up in the Yukon. So, you know, there was definitely this flood of interest that moved into the Yukon in 2010 and 2011. And to be blunt, a huge amount of money was wasted up there. Companies raised way more than they were ready to spend, but they poured it into the ground anyways, drilling soil anomalies that weren't delineated sufficiently. And guess what? They missed. And that really burned a lot of retail investors. So I think still at this point, retail is a little hesitant on the Yukon. A lot of people lost a lot of money. But what has been so surprising is what you just described, which is that majors have taken the place of those really interested retail investors, and they're moving in on all the opportunities in the Yukon. Like, it's difficult at this point to even find a junior up there with a significant and interesting land package that doesn't have some kind of strategic shareholder in the form of a major or at least a mid-tier. So what's going on there? I mean, the Yukon, I'm very familiar with it as a jurisdiction in which to operate, and it's one of the best. Like, the government is incredibly supportive. The First Nations Land agreements are almost all settled. So it's a very, it's a really good jurisdiction to work in. And there's a, it's underexplored, given how much gold came out of those, I mean, everybody says it, but given how much placer gold came out of that jurisdiction and how little hard rock gold has been delineated, there should be a lot more gold up there yet to be found. So it has all that kind of attraction. It has the stability, it has the prospectivity, has the ease of operating. So majors are moving in. And you mentioned Barrick, you know, operating like a real company. The thing that the majors really have done differently, or are really doing differently now relative to 5 or 6 years ago, is they're basically not exploring. Like, I'm by no means the only one to point this out. They're really not exploring. They just don't have exploration teams. But they need those pipelines at least to a certain extent, and they're doing that the old school way now. They're really just doing, lining up their exploration opportunities by investing in juniors. And, you know, it's interesting how in the market, an area play like Urban Barry can become hot, and, you know, the market rushes in and invests in all these companies. It kind of, that's what's happening in the Yukon. But instead of it being retail rushing in, it's majors rushing in. They just all want a piece of that game. So, yeah, it's really interesting. I think if you had asked me 2 years ago if the Yukon was going to be a hot jurisdiction today, I probably would have said no, because I didn't expect this flood of interest from majors. But it's obvious and it's sustained right now. You know, the deals just keep arising. So the Yukon is absolutely back on the map as a jurisdiction to watch. There's going to be a lot of activity up there, and because it's underexplored, I think there's going to be a lot of discovery. So, yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, and on that note, I mean, majors, they've been they haven't been doing a whole lot of buying of companies, but it seems like they've been doing a whole lot of financing, as you said, taking positions in juniors. What's the significance of that, and what might be the next step if they like what they see from a junior?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, it's the low-risk entry point, right? It's the foot in the door is what a 20% stake really is. And by taking 20%, they often get a seat on the board. They're part of the technical committee, which is good for the junior as well. They get input from the knowledge base that is, you know, Barrick or Newmont or Kinross, Agnico, whoever it might be. And then there's a couple different steps. So often the financing comes with warrants or, you know, some sort of warrant situation. And so then a second influx of money can come if things are going well. Then often the discussion is, you know, if X, Y, and Z happens, then the major will exercise their warrants. That puts another, you know, influx of cash into the company and funds some more drilling. More generally, though, I mean, they're basically just putting their foot in the door so that if this discovery happens, they can take the company over more easily. Like you say, those takeovers really are pretty few and far between still at this point in the market. That will change, though. I mean, 18 months from now, it's hard to pick an exact timeline, but I feel like in that sort of time frame, I think we're going to see a lot more takeovers. And so this is all just jostling for position. But it may be, and while it's jostling for position on the part of the majors, like you said, it's providing what is essential funding right now for the juniors to get out there and do the work that they need to do. Orin is spending $40 million this year drilling, I don't know, 60,000 meters on a portfolio of projects. That money all came from Goldcorp. Attack is up there, you know, like you just said, drilling with Barrick's money this year. Like, there's a lot. This money is really important in getting work done, because the market is still, it's a lot more active than it was a year and a half ago, but it's not flooded with cash by any means. So these strategic investments are a really important player in the market right now. So yeah, it sort of works for the big guys and it works for the smaller guys.
Okay, Gwen, you've covered a lot here. Last question, please mention anything that you want to touch on that we may have missed, and also please let us know where they can go to follow your work and how they can subscribe.
Sure, thanks. So, I write a weekly newsletter called The Maven Letter. There, you can find me, as you said before, at resourcemaven.ca. There's a free trial there if you want to try out what it is that I do. More generally, Right now what I'm struggling with, there's a few things I'm struggling with in the market. Valuations are difficult because prices are moving, asset prices are moving. So like when a company announces a deal for an asset, it's difficult for me these days to really assess whether the deal is cheap or expensive or appropriate, because a project that you would have paid $500,000 for 18 months ago is now going for $10 million or somewhere in the middle. But that's part of the dynamic nature of a new bull market. We're still in a new bull market. Everything's really in flux. So if you find the market confusing, if you find valuations confusing and share price moves don't seem to make a ton of sense, that is what I would peg it to, is that the market is still young. So don't feel like you're alone. It's difficult. It's a bit of a difficult beast to get a hold of these days. But just take your time, give yourself some patience, and dig deep. That's always the answer. So thanks for having me.
No, Gwen, thanks so much for coming on. It's a real pleasure, and I look forward to having you back again soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.